So the dealership saves the financial day without him is my final note on the film.
You guys are the real heroes.
You will make the business run.
Oh my God, we are a family.
But then
it also brings in, where's the family pact or whatever? It makes me mad. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. She makes it away with the stone,
right?
Because she like taps him on the shoulder and then dodges out of the way.
Before that, we have our fourth fight scene where she gets the stone. He confronts her. He's trying to be big man on campus, trying to prove himself, trying to get this like out of him.
You know what he proved?
Nothing.
No, he proved he a God, I'm never going to get, I'm not going to get used to that. I have to learn to ignore it because I just talk shit all the time. Let's cut to Nana isn't doing well. She has a connection to the stone.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to come for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to the evil auntie who's like, we're halfway there.
Before it cuts to him, don't Charlie and Karina have that talk about family and how he wasn't supposed to. He was supposed to ask for help instead of trying to do it all himself.
I don't know.
That's later on.
What my notes go to is drunk Danny is so good.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo as a drunk guy is so funny. Like it makes me want to fall over. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then brother mm-hmm. is like, he's only confident when he wears his costume. And then Danny goes, and I'm sorry, I don't know his actual character name, but he goes, what costume? And then we cut to Charlie. Is that his name?
But before we cut to it, we see Drunkle hold up the costume. Also, I want to ask people who've watched this movie, was there enough with the suit before this point? We really only see one scene before this moment where he's like, yeah, he's only really focused when he's in that suit. And I'm like, dude. We don't really see that.
He didn't seem super focused when he was in the suit, mm-hmm. to be honest.
Yeah.
But also, you know what? There's so much we just kind of like, we look at the page and then we flip the page.
Mm-hmm.
That's how this movie do.
And then I think Charlie has the argument or has the conversation with his sister and his sister's angry with him. She's like doing yoga on a mat. And he's like, she's meditating on a mat.
Yes. This is what I call jogging and discipline. But it's very short lived. And then we, okay. This is where my notes take a tiny tangent. Have you on YouTube ever watched the best ever good review? Oh no, God, the best ever good. No, the best ever food review show ever.
No.
Okay. Google it
right now.
Yeah. You have your phone. The best ever food review show.
You said Google it.
Google TV off.
She still listens when the TV's
best ever food review show ever.
Okay, I'm seeing it.
It should have like a green and black logo.
Yeah, I see it.
Okay, then like find a thumbnail with a guy in it. You don't have to actually watch it.
Okay, so I see it. Meatpocalypse.
It doesn't really matter. Just look at the guy.
Okay. There's like lots.
All right, find something that looks like the guy that I'm talking about.
I don't know what the guy is.
It's a redheaded guy who looks exactly like the guy from this movie.
Okay. What do you want me to...
I want you to say that he looks like the guy from the movie.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. This guy looks like the guy from the movie. Oh, wow.
Lydia Malcolm, I will throw all of this at you.
Okay.
Like Professor X. It looks like him. It doesn't really matter. But this, without a doubt, this guy looks like the brother of best ever food review show.
Okay,
ever.
So you need to make a note and ask him if he knows the guy from that YouTube show.
I'm afraid he might hang up on us if we ask.
Has anybody ever said to you before, do you know that guy that you look like? Do you think you look like him? It's not a good question. Like, it's not good for interviews. It's not good for real life. It's just, it is true. It's a true commentary. But I don't think that it's like.
We won't ask him, but later on, if you watch one of his shows, you'll be like, damn, he looks like that guy. So he starts drinking and he has flashbacks. You can cut all of that. Dude starts drinking and having flashbacks. And right. He's drinking with his like other drunk uncle.
No, it's Nana's boyfriend.
Yeah, but he's only there to flirt with Nana and then drink with him, really. Okay.
And then he has flashbacks to his dad and his stepmom, and his stepmom's being all like, I want him out of the house because he's a good for nothing, no good.
Yeah, yeah. And he feels bad because he's a piece of crap, but like he's just been told he's a piece of crap, so he's internalized it. And then who hasn't?
Mm-hmm.
And then he wakes up in a cow patty.
He wakes up in a field and there's a cow patty next to his head.
And then despite the fact that the dude he was drinking with was like, don't wear those flip-flops in the cow fields, Danny walks up and like straight up puts his foot in a cow patty next to his head.
Yeah.
And he's like, y'all have wasted potential.
Yeah, he pretty much chews him out for not getting all of it. And earlier in the scene where Marco talks about how he's only really confident in the suit, Danny's character says physically he's ready, but mentally he's not. And so this is part of that whole process is, you know, Master Jin is angry that Charlie is not like coming to his realization about his power.
He says, I'm sorry I brought you all into this. I brought you all down. And then there's a line from Deadpool that I thought of when I, yeah. If you don't mind indulging me, but remember the blind lady from Deadpool?
Yeah.
She says, I'm sorry, I can't hear what you say. I'm sorry, I can't hear what you're saying with that pity dick in your mouth.
Do you think?
Sorry, it's so stupid.
Do you think Master Jin would say that Charlie has untapped potential? Untapped like beer?
Untapped beer. Maybe for the drunk guy.
For Danny or whatever. Okay, good job. Okay, so this is where you pointed out the rib cage on the wall.
Right, so Charlie pretty much is making the decision to leave. Danny Trejo comes in and is like, oh, dare, or he's just like, so you're gonna
I'll show you, he says, and then he like woo-woo-woos up his hand and you're like, oh no, the green fire that belongs to Danny, you're like, mm-hmm. Oh no, and then he goes woo-woo-woo-woo-woo-woo, and then just blasts him the single finger salute,
mm-hmm.
He just like gives it to him hard, and then he's like, he walks away.
And during this whole conversation you see on the wall behind Charlie a human rib cage. I don't know if it's like a fake one or something, but it's nailed to the wall. And then you see behind Danny Trejo, you see a skull on a shelf, like a human skull on a shelf. And I'm like, do they have dead bodies in this house?
It probably happens. Here's my problem with this next part of the same scene is that, again, I don't know names.
Charlie?
I'm going to call him White Guy.
Yeah.
So White Guy goes out to the courtyard where he is met with a driver who is minority, who's like, he shakes his hand to prove how cool he is. And then he like loads up his baggage into the car. And I'm like, you're so broke. How do you have like driver money? Right. And then you pan up to the window and then the ladies, the grandma and the
sister.
Yeah. They're in the window looking down disapprovingly. And I'm like, I get that. I've stared at people disapprovingly, but also I don't have driver money.
Well, I get the feeling like the family is wealthy. And like we can see that despite the fact that Charlie's dealership is going through some hard times, he has a decent house. He's got a really nice car. So there's a part of me that thinks that, you know, despite the fact that the dealership is coming up on hard times, it is one of those things where, you know, he may have like a good nest egg. But if these people are essentially like chosen by gods, I think that they're going to have like wealth that they'll be able to dip into.
Let's charge it to their tab.
Yeah.
How about a full moon?
Right. Because this is when the bad guys show up.
Misty walk of that guy is what I call it. And he goes, Nana.
Yeah. Drake comes into the dojo and he's like, Nana, come out. I want to see you.
Between the Asian guy and the martial arts guy, right? He has what I will say is his ass handed to him.
Yes.
And then he says, come out to play. And I'm like, okay, also, f you, like hardcore, like you, like, and then he throws the Asian guy or Thai guy. I'm sorry.
No, he's the Chinese guy.
Chinese guy. He throws him through a paper wall, which is like a cliche we've seen about 1,000 times.
If you're going to have a fighting movie, you got to have someone getting thrown through a wall.
And then he says something like, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
And then the auntie shows up and saves his whole ass.
Right. So like Drake ends up throwing Master Hong through the paper wall, and then Master Kane comes in, fights him, and Master Hong comes back, and they're both like pretty much beating him. And that's when his mom shows up and like teleports them away. And then he's like, I don't know, like Drake says something snide, like, you know, I could have handled them. And she was like, don't you know that mommy knows what's in that little heart of yours?
It would have been better if mommy knows best, because we're all Disney simps. Right. But then she saves the day by like teleporting them all wherever they all go. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, she turns to him and says, grab my sister. Hey, let's go back to the dealership.
Oh, Charlie, Nana got taken, and we need, and the masters got teleported away. And Charlie's like, all right, guess I'm going to have to like figure my shit out.
But he's already away from there.
He's at the dealership.
Yeah. And the coworker's like, family, oh, yeah. Dealership, it, family.
His coworker's like, I'm going to turn around for you, Charlie. And he and like, how long has Charlie been away?
I don't give a shit. But what I do care about is that, out of context, I feel like, and we can ask him, but I feel like these guys are his either employees or guys he works with, in whatever context you want to put in there. And he was like, hey, you want to be in a movie? Let's prove that we're family. Mm-hmm. And I know that I, if I was an employee, would be like, hell yeah. And so they're like, okay, so we're going to film for like a day or two, and we're going to be like, hey, it is bad. And then like, you are like, hey, no, we're family. We'll figure this out. And he's like, hell yeah. And then I think it's kind of nice. Like, even though it feels a little, at the end, it feels a little shoehorned in. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Like if you're making a movie and you know some guys, and why not? Mm-hmm. Like, do it. Okay. And that is what it says. But okay, so it feels very much like he flew out, he flew back in, he goes back.
Right. He eventually gets back to the training center, and he meets up with Marco. And Marco is, what is he? He says, you're my family, and Karina and Nana are my family, and I would die for you. And that's why I'm coming back, and we're going to try and get this figured out together. And they hug, and there's like some, you know, jabs at them being sentimental with each other.
What are you doing here? What's Mexican without the green ghost? And there's like a little gay joke, but I don't want to shoehorn it in for us right now.
Right. There's like, it's like when men show affection, they're ridiculed for it.
I hate that.
I hate it.
I want men to be able to love each other without that. But we don't have to be like super mad about it right now. New uniform, I say no.
Same uniform.
Understandable disbelief. Okay. Going with montage, let's hike. So everyone is like, let's go. But then Danny Trejo's like, he's been handed a weapon. Can you guess what it is?
It's a machete.
And he says,
machete? I don't need no stinking machete. And he throws it.
It lands so good in the ground. I'm like, shoo. And I'm like, oh, Danny, good job.
So the map that they're shown is a map going from where they are down to where they need to be. But there's like this trail of them. And I swear the map shows this trail of like a middle finger. It looks like a middle finger. So like,
please post it to our Facebook.
I might have to like do a screenshot.
Okay, do it.
But it's like, what? Like, was there something specific? Like, I'm going to have to ask him about it because it's like, I've seen the movie 3 times already. And I'm just like confused about this one thing because it's very obviously that they're not just tricking through. It's like, whoop, 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 whoop. That's weird.
That's cool. But okay, here's the thing. We cut to Nana is on the
altar.
She's on the altar in this temple. Danny of the we got to kill some people to get where we needed to go is taking number one. And there's
state what?
No, yeah, Danny, he's the first person to take on the first bad guy.
Right. It's like the first fight that kind of gets hit. First thing to kind of stop them.
I call it tree blasting.
Right.
I don't know what my next note means, but it says true suit bit.
Yeah. So they go into the temple and Charlie's trying to put on the suit and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's stupid because he's trying to put it over his head and he's like, help me. Because it's not just a bit that goes over his head. It's like a suit that goes over his head and needs a zip up the back.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't do it. And he needs help. And it's bad. Okay. But here's the thing. Then my notes cut back to Danny is easily the best bit.
Oh, yeah. Because like when the three of them come into the temple after the suit bit, then they come up against Moon Eyes' sister.
That's bit number two.
Yeah. And then the Margo and Charlie scoot around the side of it.
Yeah. She lets them around in some like weird what?
Yeah. And then they come up against the third fighter.
Asian guy plus brother equals brawl number three.
Mm-hmm. And so you see all three of these fights kind of like interchange between them.
Yeah. It's flashing back and forth and it's impossible for our, let's be fair, B-level podcast.
Oh, wow. B?
B-plus. B-plus, that's basically an A.
I mean, like, for a hobby podcast with the amount of people who listen.
I mean, like, they say back and forth and we can't.
I mean, like, there are people who probably know what kind of moves they're doing. I am not one of them.
Yeah. Okay. Hand-to-hand combat. They perform a level AG-19 Afogado Jiu-Jitsu number. F*** you. I don't know. And I'm sorry I don't know, but I do like enough of action films to tell you that they go back and forth between 1, 2, 3.
No, just 3 fights at this point.
No, it's 4.
There are 4 fights at the very end, but they go. But there are 3 fights that are happening simultaneously.
Okay,
Jen, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say that whoever apologized for not having this written down, but the choreographer or the choreography team did a really good job of having each person have an expression within their. Within their fighting. Like, there's personality in the way that each person fights. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I would agree with that.
Did you notice, did you not feel that, and let's go back to part number one of part 57 of this episode of this podcast, that the sister, whose name I have not ever remembered.
Karina.
Okay, great. Karina, she leg chokes, I guess. She chokes out Mooney. And I'm like, I bet you didn't see that coming. And I'm not sorry, f*** you. Okay, so Apocalypse Guy takes on...
All three of them, mm-hmm. They get through theirs. Danny Trejo does have this nice, like, takeout moment with the first guy.
Yeah, I say that he turns the tide.
Yeah. And then Marco and Charlie, when they take out their guy, they lean in real close, and then he goes, ah! And then Marco slams his foot down again.
He, like, oh, hold on a second. Like, Apocalypse Guy, like, burns Danny's flask into, like, a burning hot something.
Right. After all three of the fights go on,
yeah.
that's when they come in and they have, and the kids fight Apocalypse Guy, but his mom is there. And I think she's the one who burns and like starts throwing stuff at the flask.
Yeah. I think the bad sister.
Yeah.
Like, because there's like a sister and a brother and a brother. So we have like this.
A sister. Oh, well, there for the older siblings, there's a sister and a brother. For the younger siblings, there's a sister, a brother, and a brother.
Well, that's fine. But someone gets zapped into later.
So after they come in, they're fighting with Drake. The Karina, Marco, and Charlie are all fighting with Drake. And he gets busy with them. I think Marco tells Karina to go get Nana while Danny Trejo is kind of distracting his sister, his bad sister. And that's when she's like throwing the red stuff at him, and it's like hitting his flask.
Okay.
And then his sister, Nana, she comes up and she teleports evil sister away. So it's just pretty much Apocalypse Guy with everybody else.
Okay. Can you tell me what my notes mean when I say Sun is crazy with that stone?
So Apocalypse Guy grabs the green stone. And he's holding on to it. And Charlie goes over to Master Jin. And Jin's just like, oh, I wasn't trying to be hard on you. I was just wanting you to reach your full potential.
My alt notes also say exposition.
Exposition?
Yeah. Sun is crazy with that sound.
Right. So
Danny, exposition.
Okay. So Danny's saying exposition. I think he's just explaining himself, saying why he was doing what he did. What's your next note after that?
Dude is bad at fighting. God bless.
Charlie is bad at fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Okay, but then it goes sister in, brother in, green boy taking it in slow.
Yeah. So his sister grabs Apocalypse Guy from the front. She's got him into like this like leg hold where her legs are around his hand.
Why do they all be tackling people with their legs around their necks? What is that whole thing?
Well, the idea behind it is that women are stronger in the legs, and so they have to do it. But it, to me, it seems a little bit like it really feels like you are accentuating a woman's groin area whenever she goes. She like takes her hold vagina. On, maybe,
let me make more noise.
It just to me seems very gross that you have a woman throwing her vagina in a guy's face and that's supposed to take him out. But God, it happens so much.
Them. God bless them if we send them a screener of us, like they sent a screener of theirs.
What's
We're not, we have no cameras going on right now.
Yeah, but what if we just send them the raw footage of us talking about their shit?
We don't have footage.
Oh my, what if we send them the raw audio of us just talking about
I think we need to have this episode edited before we share it to anybody else. Anyway, going back to the fight, Karina gets his arms held down with her arms and legs, and then Marco goes into his legs and holds them in place, and then Charlie does the slow walk, and he's just like, oh, I'm like
super not ninja-y, super not like MMA, super not like hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
He just walks around and is like, hold on, let me just solve this whole f***ing situation.
And Apocalypse Guy is tearing him down, saying that he's a loser, he's a moron, he's just a... And while while Drake is saying these things, Charlie's remembering all the things that were bad that happened to him. And then Drake says, he just calls him Gringo. And that's when Charlie says, it's Green Ghost. And then he ninja chop.
Yeah, he slays the hell out of him.
And then their energies come together. And then Drake is destroyed.
You get that stone. And then everyone is banished. And then
everyone but Danny flees the temple.
Yeah. Group hug. Save Nana is what happens. They all come together and they're like, shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. It's a little slow. I'm not going to be mad. But they're like, they look over their shoulder a little slowly. Like if I was trying to shuffle poor Jen out of a thing, I'd be like, hand at her shoulder. Let's go. You know what I mean? And they're like, oh no, Nana, we'll get you out. Bah, 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 bah. And I was like, unrealistic. But that is Naomi McQuaid nitpick of rescuing somebody. So okay, so group hug some to Nana. The temple starts to crumble. Danny okay, he makes it happen with his pen. So he sits down and he goes wah 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 wah, and then he falls backward in his patented way. And the whole temple falls down on him. And you're like, nah, it's not going to stick. Right? Is that how you felt?
Like he's going to come back?
Like the devil might come back. He might come back. He's just, or he's just simply not going to die.
I mean, I would, if there is a sequel, I would like to see him come back.
But as he does it, also you really see a Mayan calendar fall to the ground. And for some reason, my notes say it. But he also says, adios, gringo. which might be the thing I say now. Not gonna lie. I'm gonna be like, I gotta go to grandma's. Adios, gringos. Like, I'm gonna go to the post office. Adios, gringos. It's better than bye, bitches, which is my general go-to in my head.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Hey, why? Tell me, why do we go to baseball betting now?
Okay. We totally overlooked one of the best lines in the movie. I cannot believe that I did not focus on this because it's the funniest thing. So back in the fight when Danny got knocked out by his sister right out, and then she gets teleported by his other sister, he's like trying to give his pep talk to Charlie, and he says to Charlie, I fought many a hard bottle battle.
Yeah, he corrects himself for bottle for battle.
Yeah.
I hope we can all get Danny Trejo's autograph someday, you know?
Yeah.
I don't want everyone's autograph, but I do want Danny Trejo's autograph. Can we do it?
Let's see if we can.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, here's where we are. A stupid, and I don't think necessarily important, but maybe kind of important. It's
a baseball game.
It's tangentially.
Correct.
Important. Baseball betting thing, it only seems to amount to like $120, which is not like a great amount of money. But someone hits a home run and it breaks a windshield. And here's what I'd like to think. That windshield breaking was what they recorded when they broke the windshield in our first act.
Oh, so it was just like one car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it was more than one car. But I mean, like, maybe they didn't do the math good on that, or maybe they did the good math on that and then pulled it from sort of auditory library.
Right.
It doesn't matter. But we do cut to a dude in the office of dude who's like, we saved the day because we are a fam.
Right. And then,
and you can't record my eye roll, but like, I really like the idea. Here's the thing. I really, really, really like the idea of those are his homies from his dealership.
Right.
But like, they saved the day while he was f***ing off somewhere.
Right.
That's fine. But there's like no backstory for me. And I kind of want a little bit more than that.
Like that criticism kind of goes into my shocked and applause.
Okay. We don't have to do that. We're very, very close to the end.
Very close.
Okay. So the dealership saves the financial day without him is my final note on the film.
You guys are the real heroes.
You make the business run.
Oh my God, we are a family. I bet the staff room is full of like free coffee pods and granola bars, but like, I don't know. Right. What I know is you were going on bankruptcy, which I think means probably hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
What happened?
He said that the debt was choking them.
Yeah.
And for anybody who has been in a job that has gone downhill,
yeah,
and you're like choking with debt or bills,
yeah,
then suddenly it's like you don't turn that around in a weekend,
no,
or even like a month.
No. But okay, but I also have listened to an NPR show that was like, hey, if you meet certain quotas, if you can do certain things, like you can undermine these price points to meet, again, quotas that like, it's so complicated. That's why I don't want to sell cars, because like, you can be like, oh no, we told you it was $22,000, but if I give it to you for $15,000, like I can totally like do that. It's like, no, like it's too much. Like the sales game for cars is too hard for me, a college graduate, to understand. And so like, although I'm not a super genius, it's it's too much for an average person. And so
the gods worked through the team because to make them financially successful.
Because they're,
yeah,
that's the point. Because they're family. And I don't know how much mustard that holds, but I only like a teaspoon of mustard. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that too much? You can cut all of that. I don't care. Hey, guess what? It closed out to a Spanish thing I can't read.
Oh, the Spanish thing at the very end where there's a picture of Nana and Charlie.
They're so cute. And that's all I could stare at. Like this 1973 picture that I don't know what it means.
But I wrote down
the translation.
I wrote down the Spanish and then I translated it into Google Translate. So I'm hoping this is right. It says dedicated to my Nana, and then it gives her name and where she's originally from in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And then it says, thank you for taking care of me from my mother's womb, for awaiting my arrival with so much love and affection, and for your great support throughout my life. I love you with all my heart.
Okay. When Jen and I watched it, I got like 88% of that right.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very bad at Spanish. I was like, corazon, that means heart.
Yeah.
It was dumb, and I'm sorry. But also, it was beautiful. And mm-hmm. he really is apparently fluent in Spanish.
Right.
Like, I can't wait to be like, hey, speak to me in Spanish, and we will not translate it in any way. Okay. Jen, do you have any shocked or applauds that you need to add at the end?
Do you mean Sean facts?
Me. Okay, cut that all out. Hey, Jen, do you have any Sean flack? That too.
I don't, so you can just keep, let's just keep it rolling.
Okay, hey, raise your hand and we'll do it by speed. Who has their shocked super ready to go?
Could I also mention?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you have something before?
She's good. I'm second. You're third.
All right, but.
Before that, go
if
ahead.
If you have a before shocked, go on.
Our screener did have like a little last scene.
It wasn't though. It seemed like an error.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Maybe they knew that they were going to insert something at the end, but they hadn't filmed. Like maybe they, even though I know it's a relatively old production, but maybe they were just going to insert something at the end and they didn't know what to do yet for the screener.
Okay. Did you watch all the way to the end of their credits
maybe
list?
Maybe they're waiting to see if they had a sequel.
No, I did not.
It's a shot of the temple where Danny was to be.
Swish, swish. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But it's like the but first it,
yeah,
second.
It's the first second that you see in the film. And then it cuts to dude in the seminar and mm-hmm. his phone beeps and he looks at it. And those are the only two things. So if I was to brain edit it all, mm-hmm. and you know I have the skills to do that, I would have made Danny Trejo be like, hey, yo, get me out of this broken f-ing temple. Beep it. I just and then he'd be like, oh, I gotta get him out of the temple.
Be like, on my way.
Yeah, it would be funny as hell.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the end. There's no like Finn scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's no Avengers thing either setting up a.
Yeah, but it could have been. Yeah. Like, okay. And let's, because I've done it several times, raise your hand if you'd watch the sequel to this.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That's 3 out of 3 applauders. And I hope your hand is up too. Lydia, your hand went up first for your shocked moment. Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Okay. So. Lots of really good things about the movie, but the one thing that I feel was the most okay, so I was not thoroughly impressed with the story. I felt like there was a lot of things that were going into the story that didn't necessarily need to be put in there, like the whole thing with the dealership kind of going under. I think that's supposed to reflect how Charlie is feeling about his life having no meaning or purpose. I'm not entirely sure. Like it just felt like it fell through. And like the bit with the suit, we don't really see anything with the suit outside of like a few scenes. And I wish that there was more with that, you know?
It's really only 2 out of like 1,000 scenes.
Right. It's like if there was this, so I think if there was this theme of family and like you have to stick it out with your family no matter what, then I would have appreciated having a little bit a little bit more coherence with it. Like, there was a lot of fight sequences and they were really good, but it's almost like there was too many. Like if they broke up,
there was a ton of fight sequences.
If they broke up, like took out a couple of the fight sequences out of the movie, or even just one, and replace that with like that fight montage, they intersperse it less with Charlie getting beat, but more with like his interaction with his family, then I would have felt like it was a stronger piece as far as the theme of family goes.
Sorry to interrupt, but if I felt like he was more bonded with his siblings,
right,
I would have felt strong. Like, I felt like, oh, maybe he's going to get together with his sister. Maybe. Like, because they kind of leaned towards a romantic arc a little bit, not a lot, but yeah, a little bit. And then when they didn't, I was like, hey, you know, I love a no romantic arc movie.
Right.
But then like, okay, so I need more familiar, because at the end, we get so much love of Nana.
Right.
So give me a super strong bond with Nana. Give me more of that. What does that look like? Is he making cookies with her? Is she being like, hey, you're being a dipshit and you need to be less of a dipshit and I can help you be less of a dipshit? And that is a stronger bond for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not just an accessory to their family. You are their family.
Right.
I think they could have done something with that by minusing one of the excessive battle scenes, if I'm hearing what you're saying.
Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be the theme of family, because there's also the theme of Charlie having his identity, which kind of leads into something that I haven't really brought up. And it's the white savior trope. And I think this movie tries really hard not to dive into that trope.
I have feelings about that. If you would like to discuss it, I'm down for you right now.
Okay. So the white savior trope is essentially a trope where it takes a white character and puts them into the middle of this situation where the downtrodden minorities are the ones who are, you know, needing to be saved in one way or the other. Like in the movie The Help, the focus of the movie is on this white woman who wants to write a book about these maids in her life.
You is strong. You is something. You is. I never watched that f-ing movie.
But it doesn't go ahead and let these let the help be their own people and essentially have agency in their own lives. Mm-hmm. Now, this movie kind of, I think, tries really hard not to dive into that trope.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that Charlie is obviously a part of this community. He's been a part of that community since he was a kid,
mm-hmm.
but it still leads into things like Charlie feels an outsider with other white people.
Mm-hmm.
And he ultimately is like the linchpin in getting the day saved, because the white guy is there. And I don't think that they're trying to lean into it, but they're still trying to like have their cake and eat it too.
Okay, so I've thought about this. Yeah. I told you that I thought about this.
Right.
And I'm not trying to put a puncture wound in what you're saying.
Right.
But what I will tell you is the Latinx community within this film are gods,
mm-hmm.
or the servants of gods. And that, what's his face?
Charlie.
I will never say it right. And you know I won't. And when I talk to this man to his face, I will continue to get it wrong. Please correct me fast and often when I do. Charlie, in a not quite racist way, is the humans removed from the God part. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So they are better, superior, faster, stronger. And can I say something up? And I don't know if I brought it up earlier, and so I will say it now. The brother is fighting humans for sport. Did you notice that? He's like a god who's like, no, on my Saturday evenings, I'm going to fight humans like they could win. Nothing. This is dumb. Okay, I thought it was funny. Anyways, Charlie is supposed to be like this linchpin that is like, you love me, I love you, and so we are all humanity, blah, blah, blah. I feel like it's supposed to be this like big group hug sort of moment. And although he is a white guy, he has a deep entrenched love of the Hispanic Latinx community. And although I don't think it goes far enough, I feel like it is something. And I mean, that's what I see it as it is. I don't necessarily see white savior because I feel like they're on two different levels. Like the ones who could like kick so much and those who are like being brought up to their level. He's not fantastic by any means. You have to say he's not great, but he did meet them in their moment of need.
Part of the reason why I use the white savior trope is because in the framing of the film, Charlie is the main character.
Yes.
And he is the one who has the growth. You don't see growth from any other character.
No.
And his growth is specifically tied to the fact that he is helping people who, I mean, like colonialism affects every culture.
Yeah.
And so when I watch it, it's hard for me not to see that white savior trope because he's helping not poor minorities. These are very powerful minorities.
Yeah.
But, and again, he is ingrained into this society at a very early age, but he is still like his personal growth comes from it. He is important to the, you know, salvation of humanity, which is kind of messianic, which is another aspect of the white savior trope.
You're not wrong. Oh
but
my gosh.
But what I'm saying is like, it's very unshaky ground. Like in other white savior tropes, like Dances with Wolves, there's very much the, like, he has to, like, take the wisdom of the indigenous people that he's learned and go and educate the white man. And, but he still, like saves the indigenous people, too. And so, like,
You couldn't hear my eye roll, but please note that it was there.
So, it's very shaky ground to go ahead and call it 100% pure white savior trope. There's a part of me that feels like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too.
It needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that being said, and I super air five you right now for going to the hard place. Jen, you can go next because mine is like super fluffy cotton candy and it's dumb compared to where Lydia went. What's your shocked moment?
I am trying really hard to not use the word master anymore. And this title, the movie's title, does include the word master. And I guess that's maybe a little too woke of a comment considering, but like as a developer, when we commit code to the main repository of all of our code, for decades, the name for the root of all of our code where we would commit things to was called the master branch. It's where everything was the source. And when you wanted to update what was going on, you would have this master branch. And in the last 2 or 3 years, as a developer community, we've moved away from that being the default name when we create a source of truth for our code, and we just call it the main branch. So I don't know. It is possibly nitpicking by saying, you know, that the thing that I would change about this movie is the title, but I think that it's hard to say how many people won't watch this movie because it sounds a little tone deaf to them, you know. So I would have as a producer might have seen that word in the last 2 or 3 years and how the culture has moved away from it and tried to use something else, like what would you call it? Because we don't even like, was He-Man, did we change the name of He-Man? Was Kevin Smith's still Masters of the Universe?
I think it was still Masters of the Universe, but you could very easily call it Keepers of the Stone because that aligns with the story that they're trying to tell.
It's a hard word. Okay, so you want to hear a bad white people story for like a half a minute, and then I'll tell you my shocked, which is super cotton candy to y'all's deep and meaningful shocked. When Lucas was born, and I do love, but I super loved him as a baby. I was like trying to come up with like some fun, cute way of like calling him. And so I was like, Master Lucas, because I was thinking like Batman. I was thinking like Master Bruce, right? And I thought that was super cute, right? But then I took him over to my friend Athena's house and I laid him on the ground and I was like, Master Lucas needs a diaper change, right? And all I was thinking was, I have to change his... And I realized that I was in a black household and it took like, guys, hate me for this if you have to, but it took me like 3 months of saying this And I was like, you are calling your nephew, whom you love, in the house of people whom you love, master. He's a little white boy and you are in a black household. And that is bad. And I immediately stopped. I was like, hey, Lou, I'm going to change your butt. Right? But I wish I could go back in time. I wish I could change the world. I wish I could like blight those 3 months of those words that I used, because master is not great. And so I really identify with what you're saying, because I have been ignorant in the use of it. And that's really all I have to say about it, because I don't use that word anymore. Not really. Even, look, if I was to fall headfirst into the BDSM community and people were like, hey, what do you want to call this guy who's dominating you or this lady who's dominating you? I'd be like, anything but master, like literally anything. Okay, so I'm going to give you mine, my shocked moment. It's super quick, super stupid. And Jen, get ready to hit the button. The f***ing quality, effects, cinematography, hand-to-hand fighting, cars, acting. Let's go. All of it's so good. Like you haven't, I mean, like no point where you're like, oh no, this is like terrible, right? All of it. Like in terms of those very physical things, like you can debate the emotional, ethical things, but like in terms of like how fast things are moving, what you're looking at, like the drone stuff, which might have actually been helicopter stuff. I didn't pay super close to the attention to the credits. Like it was so good. Like a lot, there were a couple times it went around and around. I was like, that's not good for my vertigo, but like, cool. Right. Mine are shallow, but like I was shocked at it, because when I was told about this film, I was like, oh no, it's indie from the South and it's like a guy who has a car dealership, and that's my ignorance speaking through, I'm not gonna lie. But I was like, I fully expected Hand of Manos. I did. And then when I got met with this, I was like, did you see that Marvel opening? Give him points.
I mean, your shocked moment pretty much goes into my applaud moment.
Well, then let's go to applaud moments. Go, go, go.
Okay. So like the quality of so many aspects of this movie are just like making me want to stand up and applaud. The directing was good. You know that the producers were in it to win it. Mm-hmm. And like for like, what was it? $3.5 million. It was like less than $5 million. They got some really good quality out of everything. So it was like the shots were really amazing. The fighting was really amazing. Choreographed amazing.
On points.
Exactly. So like my one issue was mostly with the story, and I've been, you know, like into media criticism as a hobby, mm-hmm, for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's like, I see these sort of things, and when you see them, it's hard to unsee them. Mm-hmm. But like when you can see like really good cinematography, when, mm-hmm, you can see good blocking and like people are doing when Charlie comes out to talk to his sister after he got his handed to him by Moon Eyes, mm-hmm, she is like, she's in one position on her yoga mat and then she turns to another position to not like be facing him face to face. It's like,
I will
she
be looking for the director of, yeah, this film in other films.
Yeah, so she literally like turns her body, her whole body language is changing, mm-hmm, because she's angry with her brother. Yes. And that is good directing, that is good acting. And it's like, so like your shocked moment was like stand up and like, you know, shocked, fireworks.
Shocked is not a moral, right, position.
For me, my applaud moment, the thing that made me stand up and just be like screaming with like, yes, this is so great. That was like, oh, every aspect of the film outside of, you know, what I talked about earlier.
You are gorgeous. and I believe in you, and I absolutely agree with you. That's why we're parallel, even when we're opposite-y times.
Yeah.
Okay, give me yours, Jen.
It
can be little. You don't have to worry about it. It's just the thing that made your heart go, wee-you.
I will forever, like, enjoy anything Danny Trejo has done. So, I really, I mean, it wasn't really an intricate role in this one, but I mean, I think it at one point, Naomi, you said, you know, he's just over there in the corner, but I can't keep my eyes off of him. Mm-hmm. Like, it's this, even when he can just see him in his head, even if he's not really intoxicated, like he's, I mean, the way that he kind of just circles around with his body.
In the first scene when the chick touches the guy on the face, and I hate it so much because I would never let any of what, I love both of you. You can touch me without talking to me, which is a super in to me because I don't let people touch me without talking to me first. When the lady in the first scene touches that guy on the face, and I want to die when she does that. But then when the guy walks over, Charlie walks over to him when he's unconscious and like taps his face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, I would touch Danny Trejo's face if he'd let me. I would do it.
I would also say, just as a final commentary on mine, this doesn't really fit in shocked or applaud. Sometimes we only get this kind of movie because, unfortunately, of some involvement through a white production member, or like we only get this because somebody sees that there's a white person attached to it. And that's really still very disappointing. But I also see from Charlie Clark himself, from the biography that I've read, it's on his website. So, of course, it's like, you know, it's going to say positive things about him. But he does work really closely with his Latinx employees to make sure that they're communicating what the customer wants without any, they use the word broken English. He works very well to make sure that the education level is there so that they can work with both. I mean, they can work with any client, you know, they can work with any person to figure out what they need. So sometimes we need that in the community. Sometimes it's really sad that we really, like, the only way that things become popular is to have that sort of entryway. So it's sort of a double-edged sword because this could have easily just been like something that was released in Central or South America and we would have never heard of it and the quality wouldn't be there. But then like we got, like, it's obvious that they got some car money to make this happen.
Super down. That green car is like money to me.
Yeah. I just wanted to express that it would be really interesting to have that talk with him to see how his business grew and how that, why Hollywood decided that they wanted to approach him about making this into a movie. Like, what was the process to make that?
I would like to see this movie bless his business. Like, I mean, I've listened to enough NPR about car dealerships to know that it's messy. Like, the meeting the quotas and getting your bonuses is what makes your business. And so as much as I like this film, and I truly, truly do, I want to see him and his employees blessed to continue to maybe even make more films later. Like, this is set up for a sequel. And I'm super down, which leads me to my super selfish applaud moment. Are you ready for this?
Go for it.
It's super quick and we don't have to stay here long because I am shallow. My applaud moment is, I kind of wish I was a part of it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I had friends for Seattle Public Out. You watch Seattle Public Broadcast at any time? I forced you, obviously. Did you ever just get into it?
Are we talking about my cunt?
No, not my cunt. Although I did go to his prod.
Yeah, I know.
His broadcast so that he could. Mike Hunt, Jen, you don't have to bleep me on it. He did give me a t-shirt, which you would have to bleep if you saw it. There was a broadcast. There was a protest to keep his stuff on public broadcast. Right. And I went to that. And I truly believe on public broadcast, especially after hours, like, do whatever the hell you want, right? And it super got me into Night of the Living Dead because it had no
It was in public domain.
It was in public domain. They broadcast it every night, and I watched it nearly every night. I love public participation in media. And there was a show called Jerk Beast. And my friend Layla, please forgive me for using your name, was in the Jerk Beast movie, which was, again, limited release. But it was, let's say, a fine film. It was a fine film, but I got to be an extra in the crowd scene, and we had to run to different sides of the warehouse to make the 50 people that showed up look like a full warehouse of people. And I just loved it so much. And so, like, the idea of being part of a group of people who come together to love an idea so much that you make an entire movie about it, I don't care if anybody sees it. I honestly don't care. The 150 of us who show up for the premiere are like the best, and they love it so much. And it doesn't have to be good. It just has to be a thing you love. And as this movie, worth every penny that it did not make back financially, and I will add a comma, yet. Like, it's pretty stinking good. And I want to be part of that community. I would love to be part of that kind of community. And I feel like it's hard to reach that, and they did it. And that is like quintessentially what we tend to, dare I say, applaud in this podcast. I'm biting my lip and I look superficial, but I really do mean it.
Well, that's a pretty good summation, and I enjoyed our shocked and applaud moments for this one too.
Yeah.
Good conversation.
Can't wait for the bonus episode. Who are we going to talk to?
Charlie Clark. I'll write it on a piece of paper for you.
Thank you. I don't want to mess it up in front of him.
Let's try to write some questions.
Like, yeah, physically beforehand. Write questions down. Yeah. So I'm not like, so what do you like to do on a Sunday afternoon?
Well, applauders, you made it through July.
4th of July?
Oh, just the month of July?
Well, if you're in school, like, you've got a whole nother month left. Good job.
Yeah. If you're in school, like summer school.
Hey, you're doing a good job. We've all been there. Me, of the three of us, has been there. But that's okay. It's a good job. Hey, applauders, keep looking so good. Until next time, I'm Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Jen McQuaid. And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Congratulations, applauder. You've joined us for the conclusion of our review of 2021's Green Ghost and the Masters of the Stone. But we're still not quite done with our discussion, because next week we have an interview with creator and writer Charlie Clark. You won't want to miss this extra bonus material that will give you plenty more insights into why he created this movie, as well as what it's like to work with Danny Trejo. It was definitely an extra special time for us, and we can't wait to bring this content to you next week. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay! Woo,
woo, woo, woo, woo. You button. Here's the thing. I've been dating Jen a long time, about 1,000 years. But within the first 3 days of us dating, we decided communally, that we would never, ever, ever date each other's siblings. And so the idea of saying, hey, grab my sister, is like so off the table. You can cut that, but it's hilarious. I don't care. Jen, do you want to grab my sister?
This isn't the same kind of grabbing, though.
Yeah, I know. I know it's not the same kind of grabbing.
You're making it unnecessarily dirty.
You know what? That's my problem as a human being. I'll make nearly everything unnecessarily dirty. You can cut all of it. Okay, here we go.
Grab him by the sissy.
That's arguably worse, Jen.
It is horribly worse.
Why did you take it there?
Because you took it there. And I'm going to...
Literally didn't. We're going to cut all of this out. Okay.